about the work that Women's Aid does to support the female victims of modern-day slavery, that is human trafficking. As already has been mentioned today, trafficking... Sorry, are you able to hear me okay? A bit small here for this mic, but I think I'll manage. Oh, it's okay. Trafficking in women is a severe form of violence against women and a serious violation of human rights. Women who are trafficked suffer unspeakable acts of abuse, exploitation and degradation. The damage to women's health and well-being is often profound and enduring. Women's Aid face the challenging job of helping these women regain their dignity and self-worth. Women who are trafficked make up an extremely diverse group. While there are patterns of vulnerability to being trafficked, trafficked women are all individuals. They differ in age, education, culture, nationality, personality, marital status. Some have children back home and some don't. Research carried out in Europe, which was, for short, I'll just call it Stone Smiles in 2006, on the consequences of physical and psychological health of women trafficked in Europe, revealed that 40% of the women that had been trafficked reported having children. The financial implications of single parenting or caring for other dependents, such as elderly parents or siblings, are significant. Being a sole carer may put women at risk of being trafficked. Other reasons are poverty, experience of violence, family breakdown, as well as larger socio-economic factors, for example, employment, social unrest, war, and ethnic cleansing. The resulting loss of resources force women, in particular, to accept risks and uncertainties that they might otherwise reject in order to support themselves and their families. And for some women, it is the promise of a better life somewhere else. In the same study, women were asked about their experience of physical and sexual violence before coming to trafficking, to explore whether there may be common risk factors prevalent among trafficked women that may have made them more vulnerable to being trafficked. More than half the women, 60%, reported some form of violence prior to being trafficked, with 32% having been sexually abused and 50% physically assaulted. Nearly one quarter, that's 22%, were both physically and sexually assaulted. The prevalence of violence reported by women prior to being trafficked compared with some of the highest national prevalence of gender-based violence in the world. Studies with other groups of people have shown that negative effects of multiple traumas are greater than those of a single traumatic experience, which suggests that for those women who have been abused prior to departure, trafficking will add to the destructive toll on their physical and emotional well-being. At the high levels reported in the study, women's history of physical and sexual violence is likely to offer some insights into the profile of the physical and psychological well-being of women who are trafficked and have significant implications for their safety if they decide to return home. Women's Aid are ideally placed to support trafficked women, as the organisation brings to this work 30 years of experience, insights and strategies of overcoming the numerous challenges of working with traumatised women, and also the challenges in dealing with public administration processes or procedures. We have highly trained, experienced and skilled staff who understand each woman is an individual and have complex needs. They understand that at the beginning of her trafficking experience is a time when women first learn that they are in mortal danger, and this can be considered the point of the initial trauma. Whether introduced by a violent act or experienced a shock from having learned their fate, this first trauma establishes the context of danger that is now this woman's reality. According to experts on mental health and violence against women, this trauma is usually acute, generally causes symptoms of extreme anxiety and can inhibit memory and recall. During a traumatic episode, the woman no longer concentrates or observes, but instead becomes hypervigilant in order to react to the next threat. This affects her ability to recall details and may explain when women are later asked by the police and the immigration officials to recall circumstances surrounding their trafficking. They are frequently unable to offer precise details or coherent reflection of events. I'd like to refer to this slide, if it works. Can that be seen by everybody? Yeah, it's not that clear, but it's like a framework I have drafted out here. There's a pre-departure stage that I will start with here. I'm looking at it on this there. Pre-departure stage. Most women are trafficked by someone they know, such as a friend, cousin, neighbour, boyfriend or fiancé, or by an individual recommended to them by someone they trusted. Some women are deceived by promises of love. These deceptive recruitment practices cause women to lose faith in others and in themselves. A woman's inability to trust others may discourage her from seeking outside help. Her loss of confidence in her decisions leaves her likely to obey the directions of whoever is closest to her. In this case of trafficked woman, this person is usually the trafficker, the person that is exploiting her. We have the travel and transit stage then. This is a very dangerous stage for a woman. This includes travel between work destinations and usually involves one or more numerous transit points. A woman can have several periods of travel and transit, and she could be sold many times along the way. I was reading the other day, there's actually a market in Bulgaria. I think it's called the Arkansas Market, and they actually auction women there. It's like auction for furniture, basic commodities. So she's no longer a human being. She's being auctioned for sexual exploitation. Women are threatened along the way. They're subject to life-threatening modes of transportation as well. Traffickers employ threats, violence and murder to elude authority. A quote from the same research that I mentioned earlier, Stolen Smiles, says that a woman trafficked from Ukraine to Yugoslavia and to Kosovo said the most difficult part of the journey was getting shot at while crossing the night zone on the way to Kosovo. There's also stories of women travelling hidden behind panels and lorries, boots of cars. One woman mentioned travelling by boat, then by dinghy, and then having to swim the rest of the 200 metres to the shore. So it's a very dangerous part of the journey, and some of the women don't actually make it. So it's not that she's getting on a flight. And when I think of myself when I'm going on holidays and I complain when I'm flying economy class, I think I have to think twice about that now. Next stage is the destination stage, and that is the period that a woman is put to work and her labour is exploited. She's often beaten, raped, isolated from others, given very little rest and food. Murder is not uncommon. In Italy, in the year 2000, 168 foreign women suspected of being trafficked were murdered by their pimps. The majority of these women were Albanian or Nigerians. Now, this is where we come in with the police and the UK Border Agency and Migrant Helpline in the rescue and the criminal evidence stage. This stage is where the PSNI, through intelligence and evidence gathering, which, as Doogie said, can take a long time and can be slow work, but they have rescued women and they have been referred through the Migrant Helpline to our Refugees and Women's Aid. This process is handled very sensitively by the police and subsequent interviews are also carried out in a sensitive and respectful manner. Then we have the integration, which I would call integration. Women can also be re-trafficked at this stage, but also they can also be reintegrated back into life again. This work is carried out by Women's Aid with the support of the PSNI and the UK Border Agency. And refuge staff have also received excellent support from the Law Centre, Bryson House, which would be the one-stop shop, and a few local solicitors also, and a variety of other healthcare professionals. When working with trafficked women, building trust is crucial, as many women have previously offered their trust to people who have exploited them. This often leaves them with little trust in anyone. Refuge staff explain that they try to earn women's trust by, for example, providing tangible assistance, approaching women in sensitive subjects slowly and gently, and by maintaining continuity of care, throughout which the worker regularly reaffirms her concern for the woman's practical and emotional needs. Meeting the woman's practical needs is actually the first step in the process. So, Women's Aid provides a secure, warm, homely environment where the women have freedom of movement, whereas previously their time, movement and activities were all restricted. Women express relief that they are in a woman-only environment and immediately feel safer as a result of this. They receive regular, nutritious food, which often doesn't happen when they're being trafficked, as you mentioned, Dougie. They often just get a small bowl of rice per day. So they receive regular, nutritious food. They can get money for clothes, rest, and they can rest when they want to, and they have income for basic necessities, which they often don't have when they're trafficked. Trafficked women say that they don't have enough money to maybe to buy soap, shower gel, the basic things that they need. If the woman has any urgent medical needs, they are addressed at this time. Otherwise, health-related needs are usually attended to after practical needs are met. Refuge staff highlight the benefits of women to medical facilities to offer practical assistance and emotional support. For many trafficked women, this is an unfamiliar and often intimidating bureaucratic process. Refuge staff report that nearly all women have needed some level of medical care for physical health complications. For example, musculoskeletal problems, respiratory, dermatological problems or dental problems. However, the most common problems were sexual health and reproductive health problems, which is no surprise really. Those conditions noted were pelvic inflammatory disease, cervical erosion or inflammation, and a variety of STDs. Staff say in the refuge that dealing with the practical issues is a very slow process, usually taking up to about 3 months, sometimes more. This requires a lot of intensive one-to-one work from staff, as women are anxious about going to appointments unaccompanied. They're also nervous about going to shops on their own. Getting past this stage takes much longer than with a foreign national staying in the refuge. We've had foreign nationals in the last few years staying in the refuge who have experienced domestic violence but not been trafficked, and they seem to adjust much quicker. So I would say this is most likely due to the trauma that the trafficked woman, the extra or additional trauma that the trafficked woman have experienced. Traffickers also frequently lead women to believe that whatever the miseries of their current situation, they will be far worse off if they appeal to others. They are told that the police are really the mafia, or, you know, like depending on the country, if it's Italy, you know, the mafia, and not to accept their help as they will be re-trafficked. Women who may already be alienated from government authorities by cultural, social or language barriers or past experience of corruption will take much longer to develop trust in the refuge staff. However, the relationships built up by Women's Aid over the past 30 years with GPs in local health centres, dentists, solicitors, social workers, police and a variety of other agencies facilitates this process, making it easier for a woman when she seeks help. There is the unspoken bond with the Women's Aid worker when she goes to the GP or when she speaks to the receptionist when they ask for the woman's papers. Staff can whisper and explain and immediately they understand. It's not an embarrassing situation for the, you know, or a difficult situation for the trafficked woman. And that's a lot to do with the trust of the professionals, other healthcare professionals in Women's Aid. They report that, Women's Aid workers report that that the vulnerable woman, that they are treated gently, respectfully, non-judgmentally and quickly, usually as a result. They know they're not usually left waiting, sitting too long. One of the barriers is actually language. Language can be a major barrier to support. Sometimes it's difficult to find an appropriate interpreter. Yet even when an interpreter is available, the presence of a third person can disrupt the process of trust building with the staff and the woman. Finding an appropriate interpreter is of immense importance. For example, if the interpreter is from a different ethnic group or socio-economic background, a woman may feel mistrust or judged and therefore be reluctant to speak openly. If the interpreter harbours undisclosed prejudice that are difficult to pick up, refuge staff may have difficulty obtaining unbiased interpretations and they may not be aware of any inaccuracies. As refuge staff are becoming more experienced in the use of interpreters for women in general, we've been using them for quite a while now in the refuge, they realise that it's very important for the woman to identify ways to privately confirm that she's comfortable with interpreter. Establishing guidelines immediately about confidentiality is also critical when working with an interpreter. This is particularly important when there is a chance that the interpreter is from the same community for whom she is interpreting. New or inexperienced interpreters often need to be sensitised to the issues they will hear about, trained to have supportive attitudes and have non-judgmental attitudes. What probably works best is a cultural mediator. A cultural mediator is a go-between who understands the motivations, customs and codes of both the woman and the dominant culture. Refuge staff have identified a few women who have these skills. As they say, the process involves so much more than someone just speaking the same language. Once the practical issues are settled, which isn't an easy job, and I know it takes a long time, women who do not have security concerns start to begin to orientate themselves, for example, by learning how to get about on public transport. Working in a self-help way, as we do in Women's Aid, we empower women to undertake like practical tasks, for example, shopping, laundry. These small steps are especially important for women who previously depended on traffickers as their go-between with the outside world. Negotiating the world around them on their own serves as a further sign of their growing self-reliance. As an organisation, we are learning all the time, and we work to provide care that is socially and culturally sensitive. Women expect support or help that coincides with what is generally accepted as effective within their own culture. For example, we became aware that seeing a psychiatrist or psychologist was alarming for most African women, as they associated therapists with juju, is it, or voodoo? Yeah, and were wary of anyone trying to affect their minds. Formal counselling for a woman from Eastern Europe made them feel vulnerable and was stigmatising. This is perhaps because psychiatry was historically associated with political persecution, severe disorders and institutionalisation. So what works for us in the West isn't always appropriate for each individual woman from other countries. Women who are trafficked often blame themselves for having failed to recognise the deceptive or violent recruitment tactics used by traffickers, or for not having escaped the exploitive situation in which they were placed. Staff reassure the woman that they have done nothing wrong and that they are the victim. This helps to alleviate guilt, which otherwise would contribute to further low self-esteem. Refuge staff try to boost women's self-esteem by helping them to look away from the past and its memories and start developing future goals, however small or short-term. In setting realizable benchmarks, a woman begins to recognize she has a future. The other woman in the refuge also provides support and friendship, which helps make them feel more accepted and less isolated. Social support is a critical component of coping with trauma. During their trafficking experience, the absence of emotional and social support has enormous implications for women's ability to withstand and cope with the stress of their situation. Traffickers can dictate and manipulate the terms and nature of a woman's contact with others. They create situations that ensure that she does not form bonds that decrease her feelings of isolation or her dependence on them. However, in refuge she has the freedom to make friendships and socialise freely with other women. Talking to one of the refuge staff yesterday, she said that it was really nice to see two of the women laughing, chatting, bonding over cooking, sharing recipes, laughing and playing with the children, and even teaching each other English. Learning the local language is really important, as it represents the beginning of the process of moving from practical and emotional isolation to inclusion. Refuge workers believe that language is one of the first building blocks to women's belief that they can fend for themselves, interact within their new community, and eventually, hopefully, secure employment. However, a constant source of anxiety and worry for most women is establishing leave to remain in the country. Legal residency and the stability that comes with it are fundamental to women's resilience. Workers say that even the process of applying to have one's immigration status regularised appears to have mental health benefits by giving women a sense of legitimacy that alleviates feelings of guilt and criminality and allays some anxiety over immediate deportation. The work that Women's Aid staff do is crucial, as they have the understanding of trauma and its effect of gender-based violence on women. By offering a safe and supportive place to live and recognising that this is intensive, highly skilled work which requires a commitment to providing the woman with the time they need to recover while in refuge. But overall, this work would not be possible without the investment of the DOG and the excellent partnership work with the PSNI and the Migrant Helpline and other agencies. This work is making a real difference to the lives of women, and when we think about it, these women are not nameless faces anymore. They're known to us, well, they're known to the refuge staff, and it is important to remember that they are someone's daughter, sister, friend, or maybe even mother. Although the work can be a time of great trial and tribulation for trafficked women and for their support network, it can also be a period that includes triumphs over practical, emotional and social hurdles. At the risk of sounding like trite or like a Hallmark green card, Women's Aid in partnership with other agencies can help these women regain their dignity and maybe even help them smile again. I didn't use my PowerPoint because there were bits that I could have used, but I just got on with the talk. But thank you very much.